This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome to Health and Living with me, T. Xiao Yik. Today is our public health segment and we are talking about the health of migrant workers. As we all know, the effects of the COVID-19 pandemic are rippling through society, but particularly through the lives of many migrant workers in Malaysia and those of their families. Migrant workers are already financially and socially vulnerable, with little to no safety nets to support them. But the infection itself has also targeted migrant communities. They are at higher risk due to factors like their living conditions and access to healthcare. So as always, Azrul Muhammad Khalib, CEO of the Galen Centre for Health and Social Policy, joins me on this public health show. And together we are speaking to Dr. Tarani Loganathan, public health physician from the Department of Social and Preventive Medicine from the University of Malaya. And we're going to discuss, well, why the health of migrant workers should matter to everyone in Malaysia. Good afternoon, all of you. How are you today?
Good afternoon, Shahid.
Good afternoon.
So to start with, Malaysia had almost 2 million registered foreign workers as of August last year. Those were the figures that I was able to lay my hands on. Maybe we can try and get a picture of who are the migrant workers in Malaysia, so that we're not just talking about them as this alien community, but we want to get to know who they are. Dr. Tarani?
Yeah, so Malaysia is very highly dependent on low-skilled migrant workers. We have documented regular migrant workers consist something like 15% of our labor workforce. And we have 15 countries that supply, at least 15 countries that supply labor to Malaysia. Majority are from Indonesia, Nepal, Bangladesh, and Myanmar. And migrant workers work in construction, agriculture, plantation, manufacturing, services, and domestic work. So these are the low-skill, low-wage jobs unfavorable to citizens, what we would like crudely to call as 3D, dirty, dangerous, and difficult.
And what are their lives like here? I think many of us only come into contact with them when we avail of services. Or in the cases of construction workers, I think many of us don't even register them in our consciousness, you know? They're sort of in the periphery. But what are their lives like here? Where do they live? Do they have families here?
Low-skilled migrant workers, unlike expatriates, are not allowed to bring families into Malaysia, or allowed to have families in Malaysia. I mean, if you say there's like 20% of documented migrant workers in Malaysia are women, they are not allowed to be pregnant in Malaysia. Mm. Yeah. So they are here primarily to work and earn a living. So if you ask them, they send most of their money back to their home countries and they work most of their time.
You know, Azrul, obviously this is a topic that has gained a lot of prominence recently because of the impact of the COVID-19 pandemic. And from Galen Centre's perspective of public health and social policy, why is it important to consider the intersectionality of migrant communities and public health interests?
Well, one thing that we have seen in the COVID-19 outbreak in Malaysia is that the lives and well-being of migrant workers are very much intertwined with that of ours, as in the population of Malaysia. They are part of the population. And one of the things that we tend to take for granted is the labour that they put in and the contribution into the economy. The last, I remember, it was worth around 6 billion ringgit. At least in terms of the labour that's done in the construction sector, and that's not inclusive of other areas of the economy. But the thing is that because, as what was mentioned by Dr. Tarani just now, that we are so dependent on their labour that we sometimes take it for granted that just as much as what they contribute in terms of their skills and their ability to be the people who are behind the scenes, running our pasar malam, running our pasar borongs, doing the construction, doing the wholesale market work and so forth. They are just as much as us needing a certain maintenance of their health, their well-being. And that is something that we get very upset about sometimes because we don't necessarily see migrant workers necessarily as similar or of equal consideration as us, as ourselves. And I think we need to be able to look at that.
Dr. Tarani, you mentioned documented foreign workers, but there are also an estimated 2 to 4 million additional undocumented migrant workers here in the country. And, you know, on top of that, we have, according to UNHCR reports, more than 170,000 refugees and asylum seekers registered here. So how are these groups distinct from the documented foreign workers?
So when you say documented or regular migrants, these are the groups of people who are authorized to enter, to stay and to partake in employment in a country. So that means they have the legal documents like valid passports and work permits to be employed and to stay in a country, enter and stay in a country. Undocumented migrants or irregular migrants are those who enter a country, reside or partake to employment without authorization. So these might include people who have entered the country legally, but for some reason or other have violated terms of their visa or overstayed beyond the authorized periods. Okay, so because they lack a legal status, you know, a legal document, undocumented migrants are invisible to policymakers. Okay, that's why we are throwing around numbers and everyone is trying to figure out how many of them are in Malaysia. Is it 3 million? Is it 4 million? Is it 2 million? You know, so their numbers are contentious. Okay, these undocumented migrant workers are not protected by mechanisms that exist to protect documented migrant workers. For instance, documented migrant workers are covered by health insurance. Okay, there's a foreign workers hospitalization and insurance scheme, surgical insurance scheme, SPICPA. Okay, they are also now covered by the National Social Security Scheme, SOCSO. Undocumented workers are not covered by these. They do not have these benefits. Also, because they lack documentation, they are subject to detention and deportation at any point, so even at seeking healthcare. Okay, so these undocumented workers are actually very vulnerable. They have no mechanism to seek redress for wrongdoings at employment. Okay, so for instance, if there's disputes about pay, working hours, severance, they cannot find redress. Okay, so they are subject to exploitation. So talking about refugees in Malaysia, so Malaysia is quite is interesting because we are not a signatory to the 1951 UN Refugee Status Convention, okay? And we allow refugees into the country on humanitarian grounds. So the understanding is they are here to stay in a transit temporary basis, okay, with the aim of future rich settlement in the third country. Okay, so in the absence of us agreeing to international convention and having local legislature to protect refugees are actually subject to the Immigration Act, so which classifies them as undocumented. Okay, so because of all this, refugees do not have certain basic rights, in fact, you know, so they do not have rights to education, right to employment, and right to healthcare in Malaysia. So this is the different thing. So you can imagine these groups of people might be quite large. It's something like 25 to 35% of our labor workforce or 5% of our population. So a large group of people in Malaysia.
What are the problems that will arise when such a significant number of our population, they are working with us, they're living within our society. What happens when they are not able to access even basic healthcare services?
So, I mean, I think we look at it systematically. I mean, they have the access to healthcare is at different levels. So documented workers have some access, whether it's enough or not is contentious. Undocumented have very limited access to healthcare. Okay, if you have a large group of people who do not have access to healthcare in a condition like COVID, where we have infectious disease pandemic, our public health action should be society-wise. It should be entire population. You cannot treat, not neglect a certain group. Yeah.
But Doctor, you know, every other year we hear from the government the issue about unpaid debts that go reimbursed as a result of access to healthcare services that are given to migrant workers. Every year we hear this, and usually it's in the round of 120 million or so. And the thing is that, and we're talking about documented migrant workers here, we're not talking about the undocumented migrant workers. To come into this country, you have to pay a levy. And the levy is quite significant, but that levy also is supposed to cover issues like healthcare. So if you're supposed to be a documented worker in the country, you have access to healthcare, which is supposed to be paid for. And this is something that we see from people who are coming here and they're trying to access our healthcare system. And yet they're told that these bills are not being paid. So essentially, even amongst documented workers, there is a problem of access to healthcare. Is that correct? Am I saying so?
Yes, I feel that you are correct. I mean, we can break this down further. So the government rationale to increase the healthcare charges to documented or non-citizens in Malaysia, I mean, that happened in 2014 and came into practice in 2016. So now healthcare charges in public clinics and hospitals are much, much higher for non-citizens compared to citizens, okay? And non-citizens is a large group. So that includes refugees, asylum seekers, stateless people, foreign students, expatriates, and migrant workers, okay? So when you say documented migrant workers, they have an insurance, okay? This that, the SPICPA that I was talking about earlier, it is an insurance that covers hospitalization and surgical fees at public hospitals only, okay? So it is only access to healthcare at hospitals. So that means hospitalization and surgery is emergency, basically, and critical care. And the amount for it is 20,000 ringgit. Okay, that's the total annual quantum that is covered. Okay, so there is issues with coverage as well. Okay, so I would say it's inadequate. Mm. Primary healthcare, outpatient care is not covered at all. And certain groups are not given coverage at all. So domestic workers and plantation workers do not have access to this insurance.
The SPICPA insurance scheme?
Yes. Yeah.
I see. Why is that?
I understand that the onus is on the employers to provide healthcare. I mean, domestic workers and so on, plantation workers, the employers can opt into SPICPA, but it's not compulsory.
Mm. We'll go for a quick break now. Coming up, what other barriers do migrant workers face when it comes to accessing basic healthcare services in Malaysia? I'm speaking to Azrul Mohamad Khalib, CEO of the Galen Centre for Health and Social Policy, as well as Dr. Tarani Loganathan, public health physician from the Department of Social and Preventive Medicine from the University of Malaya. This is our public health segment. We're talking about the health of migrant workers. Stay tuned. We'll be right back on Health and Living on the Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Welcome back to the show. This is Health and Living. I'm T. Shao Eek, and it's our public health segment today. Why should you care about the health of migrant workers? Joining me on this conversation, Azrul Mohamad Khalib, CEO of the Galen Centre for Health and Social Policy, and Dr. Tarani Loganathan, public health physician from the Department of Social and Preventive Medicine, University of Malaya. Before the break, we discussed cost, and that's the major number one barrier that migrant workers face when it comes to availing themselves of healthcare services if they were to fall ill or become injured when they are working in Malaysia. And Dr. Tarani, you had explained that the hospitalization and surgical scheme for foreign workers, or SPICPA, that's the insurance scheme that is available for regular migrant workers, does not necessarily cover all documented migrant workers in all sectors, nor may it be sufficient. And apart from cost, On the basis of lived experience and daily challenges, what are the additional barriers that migrant workers face when they need to seek healthcare in Malaysia?
So unfortunately, there are multiple barriers. Okay, the main barriers is one that we just talked about is financial barriers. It just costs a lot. Okay, so public healthcare is more expensive. They have insurance, but it's not enough. The coverage is probably not adequate.
Dr. Tarani, when you say that services in public healthcare is more expensive, can you give an idea, some examples?
Okay, there is, for instance, a deposit that needs to be paid on admission. That is like 1,400 ringgit for medical and then 3,000 ringgit. Correct me if I'm wrong. This deposit is waived if you have a valid SPICPA insurance. Okay, but for other non-citizens, you know, you have a deposit you have to pay for. And then the charges are, they are charged daily rates, okay, and the billing is itemized. So it's very different from Malaysian citizens. And the bills, if they come in, you can imagine that they would avoid healthcare. Okay, basically, they would avoid healthcare until they really need it and they come into hospital when it's late stages. So healthcare would be more expensive. They would stay in the hospital longer. They would require more expensive treatment. And yes, they would blow the 20,000 ringgit coverage quite easily.
All right. Yeah. Why is there that fear of entering the healthcare system?
Okay, yeah. So the other major barrier is the check of documents. So in public healthcare facilities, civil servants are obliged to actually check documents. That means valid passport and work permit. Okay, if they find that the person who's come in is undocumented, they are obliged to report to the police and immigration authorities. So that is a great fear for all migrant workers. So we found that even documented migrant workers are not comfortable with this because a lot of times they don't hold their passports, okay? Or they are not really sure what their status is because work permit renewals are done by their employers. So it is a major concern for them, okay? I mean, then the other concerns are things that don't really stop them but maybe affect the quality of care, things like language barriers. Okay, so when you come in, you can the expectancy in our healthcare system is basically that everyone speaks Malay. And we do not have systems for translators, interpreters and the like. Okay, so the doctors try very hard to communicate and patients might have to bring informal interpreters in terms of their friends or relatives or whoever. So what happens there is there's a worry of miscommunication, medical errors, failed informed consents, you know, so unconsented surgeries, procedures and the like. So there is a quality issue as well. So a lot of barriers. Yeah.
And you say there's a worry of those issues, but do we have reported incidents related to the quality of healthcare that they receive?
There's very, very few studies on this. I mean, I've done qualitative research, so ask people. And this is some of the findings that we found from doctors and migrant workers.
Well, Malaysia may not have so much of a problem concerning migrant workers having access to our healthcare system, provided you're documented. I think the issue here is that we're clumping both documented and undocumented together. And that could be the issue here, isn't it? I mean, undocumented definitely would be a hurdle for them to access the healthcare system.
I would say the undocumented have a greater hurdle to accessing healthcare than the documented. Let's just dial it back a step and look at healthcare. So when you talk about healthcare, you're talking about primary healthcare. So this is the clinics and so on where you go for your basic cough and cold and, sure, you know, normal aches and pains. And then you go to secondary and tertiary care, so hospital care. So this is for more severe, more urgent care. Okay, so in Malaysia, the migrant workers prefer to go to private clinics for primary health care. They pay for services, it's quick, and they come out. Okay, so that there isn't much of a barrier in terms of access for both documented and undocumented, as long as they can afford the care.
But here comes the thing. You know,
yes.
If you're undocumented, you're in the country not through legal means. You're basically here in a way that is under the law, not really cognizant of your status to work here even. So, you know, people could say, why should it then be the burden of the government or people
or
taxpayers for that matter to help this group to access healthcare? Because at the end of the day, they're here illegally. The employers brought them here illegally. So, you know, why should it then be our burden, our problem?
The issue of security is very hard to argue with, actually, sovereignty and security, because, I mean, that is something quite separate from public health. When we're talking about public health, we're talking about everybody as a whole. So if I'm not talking about humanitarian aid and stuff like that, I'm talking about public health. So we're talking about infectious disease like COVID, like tuberculosis and so on. So if we neglect a certain group of people, or you know that a certain group of people have no access to healthcare, you have to realize that these people are walking around among us. They are part of our society as well. There's no artificial barrier between them and us.
So it's a public health priority,
yeah,
basically, right?
That's right, yeah.
If we can use something like tuberculosis as a way to illustrate the public health priority, because the one narrative is foreigners, you know, foreign workers, migrant workers are the ones bringing TB back into the country when we had, you know, reduced the numbers very significantly already. And, you know, arguably that would be because, you know, if they are undocumented or if they face barriers, even as documented workers, they are unable to access the screening or for whatever reason it may be. But, you know, we are talking about addressing an infectious disease that has public health impact. So if we use TB as an example to show why we cannot discriminate against any communities.
Yeah, okay. I mean, if you look at TB, documented migrant workers come in and they get screened for MEMA. So basically, they have a pre-departure health screening in their home countries. Then when they come into Malaysia, within the first month, they are screened. And then every year, they are screened. So, and x-rays are taken, and they're screened for infectious disease and non-communicable disease. So, by right, they are healthy workers coming into Malaysia. The question is the undocumented, okay? The other question is the conditions of living and working conditions in Malaysia, okay? So how are they living? Are they living in crowded conditions? Is it unsanitary? What are the situations at work that predispose them for illness? Okay, so this is another consideration. So what we call the social determinants of health. So if their conditions are bad, they produce them, predispose them for infection. So if they are exposed to the infection, they are more likely to get ill or to manifest TB.
I just wanted to correct you also, Xiaoyi. You know, one of the narratives that's wrong in this country is that foreigners spread diseases. And this is wrong. If we were to take the TB example, it's a very good case in point. The Ministry of Health's own Institute for Respiratory Medicine, IPR, indicates very clearly that the majority of TB cases in this country are domestic. They're amongst local citizens. It's less or around 10% of cases of TB that IPR sees is among the foreign population. And this goes also for other diseases as well, you know. And this perception that these infectious diseases, especially communicable diseases, is spread by foreigners is a xenophobic narrative, which is harmful to public health objectives and outcomes. And this is something that we need to be able to correct.
And how do we do that? That's the problem, isn't it? Because the public perception drives this narrative in a very different space from the public health discussion.
Well, I think it was mentioned just now also by Dr. Tharani and yourself, you know, we need to focus on the data. We need to look at the evidence that's produced by our own Ministry of Health to fight the misconception that foreigners spread disease. I mean, consider the fact that to enter this country as a documented migrant worker requires you to go through multiple loops, both in their own country and here, Malaysia, as the destination country. Means by the time you get here, unless you have some form of rare latent TB, you're not going to be able to pass many of those screenings. So the issue here really is that we need to be able to understand that from a public health perspective, things like quarantine, rigorous screening, all must be done within a certain understanding of the epidemiology of the population. And when it comes to migrant workers, I think most of the narrative has been driven by a rhetoric and narrative that is intended to basically discriminate and basically provide a certain amount of stigma to them. And the social determinants of health really here is really a determinant factor when you look at the well-being and the health of migrant workers, because we are the ones who are essentially affecting them, because they're a smaller population compared to the rest of us.
And if we take COVID-19 as another example, I think that's where factors like living conditions will really illustrate how vulnerable migrant communities are, especially migrant workers are vulnerable to an infectious disease outbreak. Dr. Tarani, do you want to shed some light there?
Yeah, I mean, COVID is a very highly transmissible infectious disease, and it's very easy to say that, you know, avoid close contact and, you know, wash your hands and wear masks, when reality is, if migrant workers live in overcrowded facilities, they do not have adequate facilities to wash hands and the like, they actually live in conditions that actually might spread the disease more. Okay, the conditions where living conditions are very, very important in the spread of disease. You can see that in Singapore, where their infections are basically among the migrant workers communities that are in the domestic migrant workers hostels. It's the same thing. So in institutionalized settings and settings that do not let you to have physical distancing, diseases spread very, very rapidly.
And when it comes to our response to address specifically the infections among these clusters, here in Malaysia, we saw an immigration response as well, which was to round up undocumented migrant workers and refugees into detention centres. You know, with a move like that, which, as you've said, it's a security move, but there are public health risks as well there.
Yeah, I mean, to me, the public health response is to actually try and get everybody to come forward and to establish trust between people and the government so they come forward. The thing is, we do not know how many undocumented migrant workers are in the community. I mean, there's something like 3 million, 4 million, we do not know. If we tell everybody that, you know, I mean, basically, if you come in and get screened, that means they'll check your status and you could be detained, they will not come forward. Okay. Another point is the detention itself during the time of a pandemic is also a risky business. I mean, right now we've seen clusters of infections in immigration detention centers. I mean, the issue with that is because you're bringing potentially infected people into a closed context. I mean, immigration detention center, like a prison or maybe a hospital or old folks home and so on, where people cannot come in and go out easily. Conditions might be crowded, cramped. Okay, you may not have access to water. It's all conditions ripe for infection. So it's counterproductive, I feel.
You know, if I may add to what you just said, Dr. Tarani, is that when the government imposed the MCO, it started off on a very good note. And I thought it was quite well guided by public health specialists in the Ministry of Health, that basically the EMCO especially wouldn't be utilized to implement immigration enforcement actions. And certainly the key premise there was precisely what you just said, which is that they want it to be a conducive environment where people are voluntarily going and coming forward to get tested, to find out what their status were, and definitely to to be able to get treated. And even during the EMCO period, where everybody was in place in their respective homes, they were able to control the situation and get tested and to be treated. The thing that really, worked against the government's own positive actions was when there was a sort of 180-degree turn on that, from allowing them to stay in place and to be able to control that situation, to one that was also inclusive of enforcement actions later on. And that created the conditions of vulnerability that were exacerbated later in detention. But the thing is, I think we should be able to emphasize here is that by being a migrant worker yourself does not mean that you are a person who is infected with COVID-19. And I think that's important, because we see today that migrant workers are prohibited from praying at religious places. And this is something that, is as a result of a misunderstanding of how disease is spread amongst these different communities, because it doesn't protect anyone by excluding a population. And that's something in public health we all learn, is that we need to be able to ensure that that population is able to have access to whatever treatment and care that's needed in order for them to prevent from getting infected or to treat whatever infection is available. So exclusion is not the way to go when it comes to disease amongst vulnerable populations like migrant workers.
And on top of exclusion, the economic impact of the pandemic affects migrant workers, I would say far worse than many others, within the economy. So, if we look at ripple effects, how does the economic impact, the impact on their livelihoods, their ability to send money home to their families, their ability to support themselves, how does that further exacerbate their healthcare challenges?
Well, consider the fact that a study was conducted a couple of years ago, which looked at how much of an increase in migrant workers into the country would have an impact on GDP. And it found that a 10% increase in the number of migrant workers translated to 1.1% increase in the GDP, which translates to productivity, contributions to the economy, the ability to send money home, et cetera, et cetera. So there is a certain amount of economic impact when it comes to the well-being, ensuring that the well-being of migrant workers are able to be taken care of. Now, imagine if we did what a lot of people are trying to say through the media platforms, social media platforms, which is stop relying on migrant workers today. Say if we decided to repatriate everybody home and everybody is now without a migrant worker, the economy would collapse. Seriously. And the same thing would be if this population were to fall ill, the economy would suffer. We would suffer because we depend on them to do the 3D jobs that were mentioned by Dr. Tarani, but also they are the people behind the scenes that we don't see, yet they are vital and critical for the running of the economy. So I think ensuring that they are healthy is not only good for them, it's also good for us.
And so in light of that, what can we do then to ensure that we prioritize public health interests? Because this is exactly the question that we're asking on this public health show today. Why should you and I care about the health of migrant workers? And when we come back, we'll talk about, what kind of constructive approaches that we can look at. I'm speaking to Azrul Mohammad Khalib, CEO of the Galen Centre for Health and Social Policy, and Dr. Tarani Loganathan, public health physician from the Department of Social and Preventive Medicine from the University of Malaya. Stay tuned to Health and Living on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Health and Living. I'm T. Xiao Yik. It's our public health series today, and we're looking at migrant workers, their health challenges, the realities that they face in the course of their work and living here in Malaysia, as well as the barriers that they face in accessing healthcare services when they need to see a doctor, when they need to go to a hospital. I'm speaking to Azrul Mohamad Khalib, CEO of the Galen Centre for Health and Social Policy, as well as Dr. Tarani Loganathan, public health physician from the Department of Social and Preventive Medicine from the University of Malaya. Dr. Tarani, let's talk about some constructive approaches then, not only to address the challenges faced by the documented migrant workers, but also reconciling the fact that we have such large numbers of undocumented workers as well who are already here and have every right to access health care as much as we do.
Okay, I would start first with the undocumented migrant workers. This is a problem we could look at from the security lens and looking at it from national sovereignty, and they shouldn't be in the country and so on. But I think we should look at it practically as well, especially during considering the circumstances that we are in the pandemic and so on. We should really think about regularization, having a program to actually regularize them, to give them documents so we know how many of them there are, where they are. And regularization also would give certain benefits, like, for instance, the right to work, right to employment, maybe access to an insurance. We're not talking about giving free healthcare. We're talking about giving insurance, maybe like the SPICPAR and so on. So they have access to healthcare and certain protections while they are getting their passports and work permits all sorted out. So this would help us in many ways. I mean, the undocumented workers in Malaysia are still working, you know. I mean, they're still contributing to our economy. Okay, so if we decide that we do need them here right now, we need to actually make sure that they come in and we know where they are, we can take care of them, and they can contribute to society. Regarding documented workers, we need to relook the entire labor migration system, the benefits and so on. Okay, the SPICPAR insurance system needs to be studied properly. I mean, from the kind of analysis that I've done on the SPICPAR insurance, probably the coverage is not good enough. We are not covering outpatient care. Okay, probably the total limit of 20,000 ringgit is inadequate compared to the healthcare fees in public hospitals for non-citizens. Okay, certain groups are excluded from insurance, the domestic workers and plantation workers. I think they would benefit from it as well. I mean, rather than to give the responsibility to employers. Okay, and we need to see where this money goes, because SPICPAR insurance is actually private insurance. And there's something like 20 companies, 25 companies that offer the insurance. So does it actually come back to the government? And how much of that cost is recovered? So if we look at that and look at it with all the data that the MOH has, I think we could design a system that's better for all the workers.
But honestly, Dr. Tarani, I really have to disagree with you on some points there. You know, I don't think it's possible for us to regularize such a large population of undocumented workers in the country. I mean, there will definitely be a fair number that we will be able to do, but the fact of the matter here is that there is a demand that's been driven here from within Malaysia itself. Either it's through unscrupulous employers or organized crime syndicates, but we are responsible for creating the demand and also allowing for migrant workers who are undocumented to enter the country, and we need to address that. Because the problem really is about enforcement, to ensure that employers do not take advantage of migrant workers, and to ensure that whoever comes into this country comes through the legal means. And I think that's very important for us, because we need to then provide the kind of protections that you've been arguing about in your intervention just now. At the end of the day, workers are workers. And if you can imagine, right, that the same kind of rights, privileges and access that you would wish for yourself, I think we should also have for migrant workers. They should not be deprived of any of those rights that we would expect of ourselves. But in order for that to happen, the important thing that we need to ensure is that they come in the right way. And I think that's something that of a leakage in our current system right now, where It's how can we imagine that so many people are able to come in illegally? Human smuggling is able to bring in people through across our borders into Malaysia, all of which requires a certain amount of addressing some of those enforcement gaps that exist. Because right now, the ones who are sort of victimized are these undocumented migrant workers. Because they come to Malaysia, you know, they suddenly find themselves subjects of prosecution, and, you know, they're in a foreign country, they may not be able to speak the language, they're taken advantage of and exploited. So I think we need to address some of those weaknesses within our own, you know, systems in order to get the kind of protections that we want for them. But this is important, I think, that we also communicate to the Malaysian population why this is important. I think we're not doing enough. We expect Malaysians to understand, and obviously they don't, because, you know, there's a lot of issues here that as a result of COVID-19 have come out. And unfortunately, migrant workers are being blamed unfairly for it. So I think we haven't done enough, really, to communicate this urgency with regards to migrant workers.
I do want to end on that note. You know, we've talked a lot about the basic rights that everyone should have to healthcare. We've talked about their impact on our GDP and how much they drive our economy. But at the end of the day, every Malaysian is responsible for the kinds of perceptions that they have towards others in their community, right? And it's when certain members of society push that narrative of, you know, let's fear the others because they are dirty, because they bring disease. I feel those voices can drown out the more rational, exactly, you know, public health-based voices. So, Dr. Tarani, if you met somebody, let's say in a public hospital, and that person is grousing about how there's a foreign worker sitting right next to him or her, and that typical argument of, you know, why are they using up our services? What would you say to that person?
I would say they have. I would say the migrant workers are contributing to our economy. They are also paying for insurance or paying for healthcare, and they're paying much more. I mean, you may not see it, but they are actually paying a lot more than what you might think is there. I would also say that it's important that they have access to healthcare equal to yours, because if you do not protect them, you are not actually looking out for the protection of the entire society. I mean, if we are only as strong as our weakest link.
I think that the laziest thing for us to do is just shove it back to the government and say it's government's burden, government's job to be able to do all this. And I think that's wrong.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's not true. It's actually a combined effort, but also our own recognition of the humanitarian situation that migrant workers are forced to experience, the crisis that of health that they have to endure, but also recognize that migrant workers are one of us. They're living human beings. They're part of this population. They're working for us. They're contributing to our economy. And I think they deserve our respect and, most importantly, care to ensure that they are able to be healthy. Because at the end of the day, disease does not discriminate. You can get infected. They can get infected. And what we've seen in COVID-19 is that they are getting infected as a result of Malaysians infecting them, as has been proven in a number of cases. So I think this is something for us to be able to recognize our own role as Malaysians to be able to improve in the quality of life for migrant workers in Malaysia.
Thank you so much. I've been speaking to Dr. Tarani Loganathan, public health physician from the Department of Social and Preventive Medicine, University of Malaya, as well as Azrul Muhammad Khalib, CEO of the Galen Centre for Health and Social Policy. This has been our public health show, talking about, you know, why you should care about the health of migrant workers. This has been Health and Living on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.